strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Well, this is interesting. You know how much I love to talk about education. I think it is such a big deal. How about this? The number one ranked public high school in the entire nation is in Peoria, Arizona, and it's the Basis School in Peoria. Basis Peoria is number one in the country. Arizona has 12 high schools in the top 100. 12. 10 of them are Basis schools. 10 of them are Basis charter schools. Peoria is first. Oro Valley is 24th. Scottsdale is 32nd. Tucson is 33rd. Ahwatukee is 34th. Phoenix is 45th. Mesa is 56th. Prescott is 75th. Chandler is 84th. Flagstaff is 94th. And there are two district schools. University High School in Tucson Unified School District is 81st, and the University High School in Tolleson Union High School is 83rd. Basis Peoria and Basis Oro Valley were among the top five charter schools in the country, and Basis Peoria and Basis Chandler were among the top five STEM high schools, according to the rankings. Why is this important? Well, it is important because I wonder why other school districts are not copying this. Why are you not? If you are a superintendent of a district, if you are trying to figure out what it is and why it is that students in your district are not excelling. Now, here's the pushback, and I'm going to get it in emails or messages on social media about how these schools choose their students and they handpick their students and they are predetermined to be excellent. The fact of the matter is this, they are excelling in other areas where other schools aren't. I am not against public education. I'm the exact opposite. I want to have the best public education system there is. The need for, and I believe it is a need for school choice, has come from the failings of the district schools. You can't get mad at people that are in favor of school choice. They didn't just happen. It didn't just come out of nowhere. If you go back to when it really, really got bad, it got bad during COVID. When the teachers' associations, and they've got no one else in Arizona to blame but themselves, when the teacher organizations sabotaged the opening of schools, and that's exactly what they did. I've got the videos. I mean, they can accuse me of being a liar if they want to, but we've got the videos. We have their private videos. They were on Zoom calls with the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers. There was a concerted effort around the country to keep schools closed longer than they should have been. All of the data that talked about being isolated and what it was going to do to the mental health and the emotional well-being of students was ignored. We had teachers in Arizona that showed up, and well, it wasn't many, it was a dozen, that showed up at the state capitol with flashlights because, get this, this is how great their marketing idea was. We are going to shed a light on what's happening at the capitol. They brought their family members along to make the crowd look bigger, and they did all these ridiculous protests to shut down schools. You're not allowed to do something called a sick out. I have one video where the person in the video said, we can't call it a sick out because that's illegal, but we all know what it is. It's a sick out. And what they did was they shut down schools by teachers calling in sick. The days after Thanksgiving and the break at that time, the Scottsdale Unified School District not only had to close down in-person classes, but they also had to close down online classes because of the actions of teachers trying to keep the schools shut down during COVID-19. When parents began going to district meetings and asking school boards, why are you shutting the schools down? We should be opening our public schools. They were told to sit down and shut up. When parents began to question curriculum and what are you teaching our children? We're watching these teachers teach and it has nothing to do with the subject matter. And we want answers to what you're teaching our children. They were told to sit down and shut up. They were called domestic terrorists. Not my words. That's the word of the National School Board Association in a letter to the federal government that they said they wrote in concert with the administration, that they were given instructions on the verbiage of the official letter that was sent in which the phrase domestic terrorist was used. They asked the FBI to investigate parents that were coming to school board meetings and asking questions. Now, you can agree with what I just said and agree it was the right thing or the wrong thing to do, but you can't disagree that it happened. It did. And from that, we saw an accelerated rate of parents homeschooling, using micro schools, charter schools. And from that, the big push in Arizona for school choice, where tax dollars could be taken out of the school system and designated per child. And that child could take that money and use it for tuition in a private school or any means necessary within the confines of the rules. Now, they're going to complain about the rules and all these other things. But in the end, school choice isn't going anywhere. But so then public educators, and I believe the vast majority of people in public education, teachers, administrators, whoever they are dedicated to trying to be the best that they can be. Continuing education is a big part of most professions. Doctors, lawyers, teachers, cops, firefighters are required to have continuing education. If you're in the medical field, whatever it is, you are going to get continuing education to make sure that you are up to date on the latest innovations, the latest technology, the latest tools. Why is it that here in Arizona, we have this many of the basis schools that are excellent, that are showing excellence across the nation? Why is it that they are not seeking out the superintendent, the creators of the curriculum, and the people that are running these schools? Why are they not being asked by the Phoenix Union High School District, the Chandler Unified School District, the Scottsdale Unified School District? Why are they not being asked, what are you guys doing? How is this working for you? That doesn't mean you're going to take everything they do and copy it. But what it means is they are doing something you are not. What can we learn from you? Put your ego aside for a moment and look at what's working. There's something in every industry called best practices. I use sports analogies all the time. I go back because I'm an older guy. If you remember Buddy Ryan, Buddy Ryan was the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Not a very successful run as a head coach, but he was a defensive genius. He is what was called the 46 zone defense. He developed for the Chicago Bears when they won the Super Bowl for that great season they have, I believe, in 85. And they won the Super Bowl. That 46 zone defense was revolutionary. And what happened in the years that followed is defensive coordinators across the NFL watched that defense all year long and videotape of that defense and implemented the keys to that defense in the ways it fit them. And it made defenses across the league even better. What I'm saying is the success of the NFL is based on those kinds of things. Somebody comes in, whether it's Coach Walsh in San Francisco, whoever it is, Belichick, and you look at what they call the Belichick coaching tree, where so many coaches have studied under Coach Belichick and have gone on to have huge success. That's what we should be doing. And instead, what you're going to hear from people are complaints. And the complaints will be, well, BASIS does this and they choose students like this and they do that, instead of recognizing there is excellence to be had. If you would ask how many schools in Arizona are in the top 100, I guarantee you, you're not going to hear many people say that 12 of the top 100 high schools in the nation are in Arizona, because that's not the reputation our education system has in Arizona. But it should, and it could. We all want excellence in public education. Why are you not seeking out these people that have achieved excellence? And maybe in the end you say, well, some of that doesn't fit with us. It doesn't pertain to us. What is it that does? What is it that does pertain to you? And implement it. That's what makes you excellent. In a moment, we're going to talk about driving. What are the 9 top distractions that cause crashes on the roadways? Number one's going to surprise you. We'll get to that coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, driving dangers, the top 9 distractions that contribute to accidents, according to the experts. From Distracted Driving Awareness Month, experts share warnings on visual, physical, and cognitive distractions on what would be the number 9, top 9 reasons why people crash. So a certified driver rehabilitation specialist told Fox News Digital that driving distractions tend to fall into one of three main categories: visual, physical, and cognitive. The experts identified nine of the most common distractions on the road. Now, I would think, everybody would think, right, number one would be cell phone use. It's not. It's number two. Number one is daydreaming. Daydreaming is number one. Daydreaming is the most frequent and scariest distraction. It can occur during monotonous or long drives like a daily commute. Maintaining focus on the road and practicing mindfulness and driving can help. So number two is cell phone use. Number three, looking at something outside your vehicle. I don't know what that means. I would think looking at something inside your vehicle would be the thing that causes a crash. If you're not paying attention when a vehicle or a cyclist or pedestrian gets in your path. Number four, abusing substances or lacking sleep. Well, that makes sense. All right. Number five, reaching for objects. Now, I know that's a big one. Interacting with passengers. In other words, shut up when I'm driving. I like that one. Eating and drinking is number seven. I'm going to get to a point in a moment. Adjusting the onboard system. So whether it's air conditioning or the radio or whatever else. And number nine is dealing with pets or moving objects in the vehicle. That's another one that gets me. And I'll tell you why. Here it is. We have got people in the legislature running to make laws. People in the cities running to make laws. Texting and driving, which was already illegal, by the way. Distracted driving is already distracted driving. Whether it's reckless driving or you are just not paying attention when you're in the road. If you're weaving around, I was watching an episode of Cops years ago. And someone was pulled over because they weren't maintaining their lane. Well, it turned out they had just bought a sandwich and they were driving with their knees and opening their sandwich. And that's why they weren't maintaining control of their vehicle. That's distracted driving. That's negligence. That's all of those things. If you wanted to write somebody a ticket, you could. If somebody is texting while they're driving and they're not maintaining their lane, or usually what they do is they're driving much slower than they need to because they're not paying attention to their speed, they're reading their phone, there should be a ticket available for that. But we had to run to the legislature and we had to make laws because people unfortunately had died because of texting and driving. And people waved their fist in the air. We have accomplished something. How? What did you accomplish? You think people still don't text? You think it doesn't happen. Now, see, fortunately, I have a vehicle, and the vehicles I've had for a long time, I have voice activation. I make a phone call. I can get a map. All those things in my vehicle give me directions on where I need to go. I can push a button. I can say destination street address, destination POI, which is point of interest. And it can take me where I want to go. I can push a button and say, call so-and-so, and it will call them on their cell phone. And I can do everything hands-free, which keeps my eyes on the road. All of that's great. But what about all these other distractions? One of my favorite stories I've told in the past about driving. When I had my business, the one year I drove 40,000 miles here in Arizona in one year, just within the valley. Well, I shouldn't say just the valley. It stretched out to Pinal County quite a bit. But I drove 40,000 miles in one year, which for some is not as much. I know there's some of you who have driven more. That's a lot of miles in a year. And we were going north on the I-17, very busy time of day, rush hour traffic. It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 4:15 in the afternoon, and I was in the left-hand lane, not in the diamond lane, not in the MOV lane, but in the left-hand lane. There was an old pickup truck, like an old Datsun pickup truck. That's how long ago this was. Pickup truck in the middle lane. And there was something sticking out of the driver's window, probably about 8 to 10 inches out of the window, sticking out the window. And I had no idea what it was. And it was me and a couple of guys in the truck with me. As we rolled past this little pickup truck, the driver was playing the guitar. I'm not joking. Steering with his knees and playing the guitar. No law against that, right? We didn't go to the legislature and write a law against guitar playing. I know a girl that used to drive to work. She drove a minivan. and I knew her very well. She would drive to work. She smoked back in the time when you were allowed to have a cigarette, and she smoked. So in her left hand, she had a cigarette because she had the window cracked. So in her minivan, she drove with her left hand, she had her cigarette, and in her right hand, she had a mug of coffee. This was before we had all those other coffee mugs. She had a mug of coffee in her other hand. So she was literally driving down the 17 using her ring finger and her thumb on her left hand to steer the vehicle. Nothing else was touching the wheel. My point is, if you're an idiot, you're an idiot. And we can make all the laws in the world about it. And you just see people not paying attention. Distracted driving is not a joke. I'm not making a joke about people getting injured in crashes, but we run and we make these specific laws because it makes people feel better. It doesn't make the roads any safer. People are still distracted. You drive on the 101, people think that the 101's the speed limit. They think that's what the 101 means. They don't think it's the freeway designation. It's the speed limit. Do 90 on the 101, you're still going to get passed. So I just be safe is the lesson. But my gosh, you know, the idea that we're going to legislate specific things that people do and somehow it's going to make us safer just doesn't work. In a moment, the Supreme Court, and this is a very serious topic, it appears as if the Supreme Court is going to side with the Oregon town in enforcement of homelessness. How do we address this issue and what would this mean for the rest of the country? We're going to do that coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, the Supreme Court appears to be siding with the Oregon City's crackdown on homelessness. I got some reports on this. I'm going to go to Steve Portnoy from ABC to let you hear a little bit of what's happening. Sympathy from the justices for homeless people is where we start.
The case involves an Oregon town's efforts to ban homeless encampments. The High Court's three liberals forcefully defended the right to sleep in public places. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson.
It seems both cruel and unusual to punish people for acts that constitute basic human needs.
Conservatives on the court mainly spoke in support of the law, but Justice Brett Kavanaugh pointed to a lack of available shelter beds.
There are going to be a certain number of people who there's nowhere to go.
And so we're going to touch on these in a minute and what I think is going to come out of this and how there is a balance in all of this, because now they're talking about the ban on these homeless encampments.
The case questions whether Grants Pass, Oregon's law banning homeless encampments violates the constitutional prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment. Liberal justices were outspoken in their opposition to the law. Sonia Sotomayor asked, where are those without a home supposed to sleep?
Are they supposed to kill themselves not sleeping?
But conservative Neil Gorsuch asked, what if there are no public restrooms?
Do people have an Eighth Amendment right to defecate and urinate outdoors?
A decision is expected in June.
So there's that's the struggle. So now they talk about the struggle of the encampment bans.
The justices clearly struggled with whether governments can ban homeless encampments. The court's conservative majority seemed inclined to uphold Grants Pass, Oregon's law. But Trump appointee Brett Kavanaugh pointed to those who might go to jail for not sleeping at a shelter that's already at capacity.
You still don't have a bed available. So how's this help?
Liberals were outspoken in their opposition to the ordinance. Sonia Sotomayor.
Where are they supposed to sleep? Are they supposed to kill themselves not sleeping?
So that's a recap of a lot of what happened. Some of it was a little bit redundant, but it gives you a taste of what they're arguing about. Now, what's interesting about this, and maybe we differ on what we believe the court's idea or the court's purpose, in my opinion, and I think the opinion of many people, is that they're supposed to decide whether or not a law is constitutional, not whether or not they like it. So the arguments against the law in the sense of I don't like this law, where are they supposed to sleep, is that their job in this. But let's talk about the solutions. There are a lot of laws on the books, and law enforcement has a lot of discretion in those laws. And so I asked this question yesterday. I'm going to ask it again. I want you to envision this because it's something that happens every day. I drive to work in the mornings early. And now at this time of year, the sun is coming up. But most of the time, most of the year, it's dark when I drive into work. And I drive down the surface streets. I don't take the freeway. I like to drive because, you know, traffic lights are pretty much green all the way. And so I just take the surface street. It's easier than me cutting across to the freeway. So as I drive south to come into the office, there's a lot of bus stops along the way. And even though I don't live in a neighborhood, I don't live in an area where there is a lot of issues with homeless people, often I will see people with a shopping cart full of stuff sleeping on the bus stop benches. So you tell me what's appropriate. If there is someone gets up for work, a woman gets up for work, she's got to take a bus into work. And so she gets up, she gets herself ready in the morning, she grabs her lunch and she grabs the things she needs and she goes to the bus stop. Should she have to stand and wait for the bus because somebody's sleeping on the bench? Or are you allowed to, should the police be able to roust that person and say, you can't sleep here? Well, there's no shelter bed for me. Or do you tell them you have to move along? You can't sleep there. If you pulled into your neighborhood today after work and there were 8 or 10 homeless people that set tents up on the sidewalk out in front of your home, would you have an expectation that law enforcement was going to move them along and tell them that you can't sleep on the sidewalk in front of people's homes? And what if they didn't? What if the situation that happened at the zone down by the Central Arizona Shelter Services, where it got so out of control, what if what happened was law enforcement ignored it because they believed they were being told by a federal law that said they couldn't clean up the area? So over a few days, over a few weeks, trash began to pile up. Human waste began to pile up. There was drug paraphernalia that was left there on the streets. You had witnessed sexual activity, nudity, people relieving themselves in public. Would that be an acceptable thing for you in that neighborhood, or would you believe something has to be done? Now, here I am someone that is an advocate to try to stop homelessness. I think the city of Phoenix and its partnership with St. Vincent de Paul, I think what Central Arizona Shelter Services does, what other organizations that deal with hunger and homelessness are amazing. And it's going to take a community effort to end it. It's something that I would love to be a part of, ending homelessness or dramatically reducing homelessness, not having the people that are in danger of losing their homes, keeping them in their homes and finding a way for this to happen. I would love to be a part of that solution, but there is a balance in human behavior. You know, I lived in the old place that I lived was in the area of 32nd Street and Thomas in that area. And just south of Thomas on the west side of 32nd Street, there is a massive park, and it is a beautiful green space for the kids that live in this densely urban area. And it's soccer fields mostly. They've got soccer goals set up and the kids play and practice soccer on that field very often. Right around there was a lot of people that were homeless that had camped out. Should those kids not be able to play on that field because homeless people are camped out? Should parents have to worry about their kids dodging drug paraphernalia and human waste in those areas? Or are they being horrible people because they would dare say our kids deserve a safe, clean place to play? This is the balance in humanity. I completely understand. I'm empathetic. I'm sympathetic. I would be willing to help in any way I could to end homelessness. If I can, I would love to be a part of the solution. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a basic level of human behavior that has to be maintained. And if you don't have laws on the books that cops in certain circumstances can enforce, this is what happens. You get places like The Zone. I have a couple of friends who have lived in their home, I know, for over 30 years, probably longer than that. There's a park near their home that's got one of the public swimming pools, 19th Avenue north of Union Hills. There's a park there. And over the past year or so, they have seen an increase of people sleeping in the park, setting up camps in the park. And these are homeless people. There is drug activity that they know goes on. There's drug paraphernalia that's there. Why should the neighbors in those neighborhoods, why should they have to tolerate that behavior? That doesn't mean you're intolerant of homelessness or the plight of someone in a bad situation. It doesn't give them the right to use illicit drugs, to leave paraphernalia around, to relieve themselves and be nude in public, sexual activity, bad behavior. It doesn't give them the right to do that. And this is where the balance has to be. So the Supreme Court here isn't able to solve the problem, nor should they. Their job is to figure out whether or not local jurisdictions have a right to put in place laws that allow them to handle what's unique in their municipality. And that's what the Supreme Court's there to do. You've got liberal justices that are arguing about whether or not they like the law. That's not their job. That's not their job to decide whether or not they like a law. Their job is to figure out whether or not it fits in the confines of the United States Constitution. We'll see. We'll see how this all works out. In a moment, ASU, all of you ASU friends and fans, you're number one. You're number one. We're going to tell you what you're number one at coming up here in just one moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Okay, I'm going to wade into this cautiously because I want to be sarcastic, but I know there are some sensitive people on this. Arizona State University, number one. Number one. Most penalized school in NCAA history.
Yeah. And I didn't realize, Mike, that the list of instances of infractions goes back to the 1950s.
Yeah. I have an issue with this, and I want to get your opinion on this. I've had an issue with this in college football. You know I'm a big college football fan.
So am I.
But I get very upset when programs go sideways. Then the coaches leave and go on to great careers and different career paths. And until what we've seen with the transfer portal, students, athletes were stuck paying the price, and that bothers me.
It bothers a lot of people, and it is frustrating because ASU has been punished for something. Most of the people involved with the infractions have long since left.
Right.
And what's even more frustrating is a few of them are in very comfortable jobs at the moment. I was talking about this with a friend of mine over the weekend. And I said, the real problem here is, why does it take the NCAA so long to work through these things?
And why don't they have rules set in place that if you are a head coach or you're an athletic director, if you are someone that's found to be directly involved, there's some kind of an automatic fine or you can't move on to something. Like with the situation with Pete Carroll, I'm no USC fan at all. But if people remember what happened with Pete Carroll and the restrictions against USC, USC was hammered for what happened when Pete Carroll was the head coach. He left and went on to the Seattle Seahawks with an illustrious career,
right,
and tons of money and Super Bowl wins, while those student athletes at USC were mired in not being able to bowl games and restrictions on recruiting, and it made that program suffer, but Pete Carroll went on to a great career.
Yeah, and I don't know what the alternative would be. I mean, the show cause penalties that have been assessed to Herm Edwards and Antonio Pierce are literally pointless because I don't see either one of those men, for different reasons, returning to coaching college football. Herm's at a point in his career, he's probably done coaching, period. Antonio Pierce is a head coach in the NFL.
Yeah, and let's back up for a moment. For people to understand what happened during COVID, ASU was found to be guilty of recruiting violations at that time. Herm Edwards and that coaching staff with player visits and things that were illegal at the time. And the NCAA hammered ASU for this. But Herm and the people that were involved are long gone.
Right. And there are scholarship restrictions. There are visitation restrictions now in terms of recruiting. Fortunately, there's no postseason bowl ban. And maybe I'm looking at it with maroon and gold glasses on. But Kenny Dillingham seems to be pulling together a team that could conceivably get to six wins, maybe one more, and get in a bowl game. So thank goodness there's no ban.
And here it is. Let's talk about Dillingham for a moment. Here is Arizona State University, one of the largest in enrollment in the entire country, going back and forth with Ohio State. And so the athletic programs there have not risen to the level we've seen at Ohio State, especially the football program. But here's an opportunity with a coach that seems to have this program moving in the right direction. You've got a lot of kids in Arizona that are Arizona-raised kids now that would love to play in state. And here they've got this hammering this guy who had nothing to do with the problems that were created.
Yeah, and two things related to that. Number one, he knew there was an investigation going on when he was offered the job. The other thing was, to be honest, Mike, when we got the news about the infractions the other day, my first response was a sense of relief. Okay, now we know for the most part, there's still some things hanging out there that need to be resolved. But from the school standpoint, it's been resolved. Now we can move on. Yeah, lack of scholarships hurts, restrictions in recruiting hurts. But at least now we've gotten the most of this, and the feeling of it hanging over us as a program, that's gone now.
Yeah, but how do you solve the problem? If you want this to stop happening, you've got to be able to punish the people responsible for it happening. The student athletes get hammered for it. The athletes that had nothing to do with the violations get hammered for it. But the coaches that are involved in the violations walk away scot-free for the most part and go on to careers where they're not punished for anything.
And that's one of the things that needs to be fixed about college athletics. I know you're up against a time. There's been a proposal, and it's one that I frankly agree with, to take college football and separate it from every other college sport and have it regulated by a central figure like a commissioner. If you had that in place, I think these things would not drag out for 3 years.
Especially if there were financial penalties against people,
that
even if
too.
They're gone. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. I just wanted your expertise and to give you a little hard time about ASU being number one. Thanks for taking it with in the very good-spirited way I meant it.
No problem,
so,
sir.
This also coming from a Miami Hurricane.
I know.
We've had our issues.
Who won the last time we played you guys?
All right. What we're going to do coming up in the next hour at 10:05 is our AZ ballot breakdown. We're going to talk about a new poll that shows Biden pulling ahead in some head-to-head matchups. Is the trial of the former president starting to take its toll? We're going to talk about that and also another political thing happening here in Arizona that may have a big effect.